Hi, this is Larry London, and I welcome you to a special Border Crossings. Today, we are joined by a singer-songwriter who's known around the world. He's had number one songs on the charts in various different countries. We would like to welcome the one and only Uncle Cracker to Border Crossings.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
It's great to have you on, and, you know, we have something in common. Maybe, you know, I guess you grew up in Mount Clemens, Michigan, and I worked at 16 in Gratiot for a while.
Come on.
At a radio station named Kiss FM back in the day.
Oh, my God. Did you know Fred Park?
I did.
What a small world.
Well, it's nice to be with a homie once again from Michigan. Michiganders. Now, right now, you're backstage somewhere on tour with Lynyrd Skynyrd and ZZ Top.
Yeah. Yep. We're on tour with Skynyrd and ZZ Top. Pretty sweet, to be honest. Still can't believe I'm out here with them.
But it's a rock and roll show. And I know you do a little rock. You've done some hip hop. You've done some country. You're kind of very, very diverse in the music you've done.
I think that's why they stuck me out there, to be honest. I was nervous coming into this tour. I was nervous about the fit. I wasn't about, you know, anything else. I just wasn't sure. So far, so good, man. We've had our first week been out of the way, and so far, so good.
So how did you get into this business? I read something about your brother having a large role in how you actually started.
A long time ago, when I was younger, all the public access channels, you know, you had to stay up late and to watch some of the cool stuff at Friday and Saturday nights. And they used to show rap videos, you know, back when I was like 10 years old. And I remember seeing the Fat Boys come on and Jailhouse Rap. And it was a video, and it blew me away. And I didn't really know what was going on. This was new to me, all the rap stuff. So I started getting into, you know, I started digging, and, you know, you had to go to the record store and dig through the crates and bins to find that stuff. You know, you couldn't just Google it, so I just started coming across a lot of cool rap stuff, and I wanted to do that. I wanted to rap. I wanted to be a rapper at that point. And so probably when I was about 12, my brother put me in a studio, and then by the time I was like 13, I had met Kid Rock, and he put me on a he put me in his studio out in Romeo, Michigan, in the middle of nowhere. And things just kind of flew through. Got my first record deal when I was 15, and Kid Rock got me out of that when I was 17. This label had owed him a bunch of money or something like that, and he washed it for them to let me out. So, when you say my brother, he definitely had a hand in like helping me connect the dots. And my brother was a disc jockey at the time. So he was very instrumental in holding my hand, I guess you could say, and taking me to where I needed to go.
Yeah. I was reading that your brother, being a DJ, you entered a DJ contest in a club. I don't know if it's Odie's or the Locker Room Saloon or the Hayloft. I remember all those East Side clubs, but you know,
this was a club in Clawson. It was Clawson, and it was called, it turned into a teen club on Sunday nights. Remember the legendary, the electrifying Mojo.
Oh, yeah.
WLB at the time, he used to host these Sunday night teen nights. Mm-hmm. Well, they had a DJ battle competition, and my brother entered it. He was 16 at the time. I was 13. Well, when he entered, he had to go up against Kid Rock, who we had not met. That was when we did meet him. So, and I remember this plain as day. Kid Rock was so cocky back then, he didn't even bring his own turntables. He paid my brother $100 to use his turntables and then smoked them on his own tables.
That's great. That's great. Hey, Mojo's mothership just went by.
Oh, yeah. Remember he used to land that thing.
That's right. We're talking with Uncle Cracker, whose real name is Matt Schaefer. How did you come up with Uncle Cracker?
So Uncle Cracker was, when I started running with Kid Rock, a lot of his friends at the time would call me Cracker. So it was, I might've been the only person in the room that didn't know what was going on with that thing. So it just stuck. It stuck, but we ran with a pretty good group of cats, man, and they were they were good dudes. The Beast Crew, they were cool guys. But the uncle part. So when I got my record deal with Atlantic Records, there was already a band called Cracker. So we couldn't use that. So the attorneys were like, "Oh, you got to put something before it or after it." So I was on tour. I was on tour with Kid Rock, and I was flying home because I had just had a baby. So I had like so I was on one of those cut the budget flights where you had like four different layovers before you got from Detroit to New Orleans. And one of the connection spots was Nashville. So I go into the smoking lounge to smoke a dart. And on the wall, there was a picture of Uncle Dave Macon and like his story, how he used to ride in and out of town playing a banjo and his horses knew his way in. So it was at a time where I needed to do something with the name. And I was just like, well, that uncle just sounded pervy enough to use. And for what we were doing at the time, it was fun and weird and creepy, I guess. So it was cool. I didn't expect to be still sitting here after all these years, but it was fun. And it was fun at the time.
It's great that you can continue doing what you're doing, because that means you're successful at it. And you have been very successful.
Thank you. I've been very lucky. Happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. And you got what, five kids, six kids?
Yeah, man, calm down. You gotta make me sound like a rabbit when you say that. I was married for 15 years. I had three daughters, and we got divorced, and my fiance and I have two boys together.
So wow.
I have to explain that. I feel so weird anytime since.
Do any of your kids have interest in music? Are they kind of followed in your footsteps?
No, they all love music, but none of them. No, thank God. Thank God none of them followed me in this business.
How did they view you when you were number one on the charts, when your first number one song came out, Follow Me? I mean, here's Dad on the radio. Everybody's listening to you performing on the radio. That must have been surreal.
It was surreal for everybody, me included. It was weird. I know the kids, you know, at home, they'd see me on TV and they'd cry when they'd ask for them, because they'd see me and yell for me and things like that. And, they adjusted. They did good with, it was the being away. It was being away from home so much that got them. But it was the only thing. Thankfully, it's the only thing they knew. So it wasn't like some huge thing. Like, I was on the road when my first daughter was born. I missed that. Early on, they weren't like uprooted, and nothing came all of a sudden to them, you know.
Right, so, right. And now they must be proud of their famous dad.
Oh man, my girls are I'm very lucky. They're great kids and good. They're good girls, and they're great kids. They're great kids, and they do love their dad almost as much as their dad loves them.
I'm sure. And must have been pretty scary when you'd come home and the toilet seat was up when you have three girls in the house.
You learn pretty quick, man. That's not something you mess with, man. These toilet seats. I still go into places and I see these people peeing all over these seats. And I'm like, man, look, these animals.
Right? Animals. Us guys, we're animals. We're talking with Uncle Cracker, who is on the road right now performing on a tour, which includes ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd. And you recently did the CMA Fest. And so I just wanted to ask, do you have a preference in audience size? Is it different to perform for 50,000 people versus performing for 300 in a club?
There's absolutely a big difference between the two. And I prefer 300 as opposed to the 50,000. And for no other reason other than it's so much easier to connect, you know, with the few people, you know. It's I don't know. My grandpa used to tell me, he's like, you know, a person can be smart, but people can be dumb. People are dumb. A person can be smart. The smaller the group, just the more intimate and the more connection you can make. You know, it's too chaotic with that many people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're the dude bringing all 50,000 to the party, it's kind of like, I don't know, you're just throwing it.
Okay? Right. You roll with it and hopefully they pay attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, there's so much going on at those things. Don't get me wrong, I love performing. Mm-hmm. But it's but I like the small, intimate settings. If I had to pick.
Mm-hmm. Is that your favorite part of the business, is the performing part?
Yeah, no, the creating part is my favorite part.
Ah, okay.
Only because the performing part requires leaving home, you know?
Right.
That's the, as you know, that's the part no one likes.
So why haven't you been creating for 11 years? Why is 2012 the last album?
So 2012 was the last. So I had been in a record deal with Atlantic Records for 14 years. And I bought my record away from them and took it to Sugar Hill. And it came out like December of 2012, which was basically 13. And then I toured that for 2 years. And then the guy that originally signed me at Lava Atlantic, Jason Flom, signed me again in 15. And we put out a single. It was one of those, it was kind of a single deal. And then that thing was just kind of meh. And then after that, it was kind of time to regroup. And there was no real reason to hurry or anything. Like that time, man, just slipped. And like I said, throw a divorce in there and throw a few things. So I never stopped writing, but there was no label in place to put anything out. And I wasn't ready to tackle social media and, you know, figure that part out. You know, the internet stuff is, I wasn't in a spot where I was ready to figure none of that stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. So there was no, there wasn't like I haven't been. I've still been busy. I still do 150 shows a year. But the music part, I've always still written. Got a ton sitting around, but we're back to putting out songs now. And it's kind of crazy. You know, you can to be able to put one out every 30 days now is nice. I used to beg the record labels to let me put out more, like, more music quicker, you know, and it wasn't a thing for that back then. But.
So what that leads us into the first song. What are you going to do for us first?
Well, why don't we do Sweet 16?
That's the new single, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, we just put Sweet 16 out. I think we're gonna do a few today, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Let's do Sweet 16 first.
All right, that sounds great. Here's Uncle Cracker and Sweet 16. Border Crossings, Uncle Cracker's with us. That song is called Sweet 16. You've got another song out, actually a couple of other songs. Is there a new album in the works?
So, yeah, the plan is to drop a new single every 40 days and then put the album out after the new year, the full album.
Do you have names for the album yet? Have you thought about names?
It's tentatively called Indistinct Chatter.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I found Netflix during the pandemic and I couldn't, but what I didn't find was how to turn off the subtitle stuff. So I just remember sitting and watching every day, all day, and, you know, and then at the very bottom, it's an indistinct chatter.
That is a great album name and a great story. We've got Uncle Cracker with us here on Border Crossings, a new album. Album number 6, I believe, is on its way at some point in the very near future. And you've been working very hard over the years, as you mentioned, you know, writing songs and touring. Now, when you're writing a song for a country music versus pop or hip hop, there must be a difference in your approach. It's got to be difficult for one guy to write different genres of music.
Well, I guess the only real difference would be, however you're going to go melody wise. And some people would argue, in the past I've had songs that weren't necessarily a country song, but then somebody would take it and remix it, just throw a pedal steel in there and call it country. Mm. You know, but my approach is pretty similar. You know, I won't really start a song unless I have a chorus first.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's my approach stays pretty same, but the only real difference, I guess, would be melody for verse, you know, verse reasons, I guess, you know, if you are rapping, you know, you throw more of a scatty thing on there, but you still got to get melodic. It's still always in my, anything I do is still going to be a kind of a blend of everything, like a little hodgepodge of just something. Cause when you end up sitting in a studio and you're writing everything, just got to feel good. And you don't know what it's going to, you don't really know what it's going to be until it's done. So I don't really set aside and go, I'm going to start with, you know, a country song versus a rap song. It's kind of whatever's feeling right at the moment, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Where is the most unusual place you got inspiration for a song? The most unusual ideas that came from where?
Oh, man. I guess, I can't try to say that. But,
got to read the book, right? Got to read the autobiography. No,
I mean, I just mean, you know, inspiration comes from, the best ones come from weird places, I guess. You know?
Yes, yes.
I mean, I don't want to say like sitting at funerals, you know, an ideal pop in your head. You'd be like, oh, let me write that down.
Man, I got a song.
Yeah. So I guess it comes from everywhere, you know, it comes from all over the place. My best ideas too come from just driving in my car. If I get in the car and I'm driving, my best ideas come because I drive with no radio on, which my kids think is weird.
Well, they don't understand. You do that for a living. You know.
Right.
I mean,
right. I just want all.
Exactly. Turn out the noise right now.
Yeah.
We're talking with Uncle Cracker, and it's very exciting to have you on the show because we're a local Detroit connection. Are there Detroit artists, or where did you get your influence from growing up? Was it Bob Seger? Who was it that was influencing you? Ted Nugent? Where'd you get it?
So, as I grew up, as I got older, I started getting into Seeger. I couldn't have told you who he was when I was young. But man, what a gem he is. Kind of our unicorn up in Michigan, I guess, is Bob Seeger. But growing up, I listened to a lot of like AM 70 stuff. My dad listened to all doo-wop music, which is pretty much where my arrangements come from, where that just verse chorus, you know, just arrangement wise stuff. But my mom used to listen to, like, you know, James Taylor and BJ Thomas, and just she just had this, she was the one that drove us around a lot, you know, as kids. So music came from her, that type of stuff. So I guess that's where, since you ask.
What's the next song you're going to do for us?
Let's do the new single. Let's do Reason to Drink.
Reason to Drink. I like the name of it. Here's Uncle Cracker on Border Crossings. Uncle Cracker here on Border Crossings, and that's Reason to Drink. Do I have to ask the inspiration of the song?
Well, no, it's
self-explanatory.
During the pandemic, I had put out a song called No Time to Be Sober. And a buddy of mine, I was living, well, I was in Detroit at the time, and a buddy of mine was in Nashville who I'd written the song Smile with. So we were on FaceTime talking about how weird everything was because the pandemic had just started and it was getting along, and we just talking about how weird everything was at the time. So he commented on No Time to Be Sober. And he said something like, he said something about, you know, something's another reason to drink or something like that. And I was like, well, I don't usually find myself needing too many reasons to drink, to be honest. And so he notes that he's smart like that. He'll write down like an idea. So we went further, and he started talking about how everybody started writing Zoom rights in Nashville because nobody could meet with each other anymore if you had masks and everything was shut down. And in Michigan, we were really shut down, so we weren't leaving either. And so anyway, we got on this Zoom. Blair Daly, Troy Burgess, and myself, and I said, let's try this Zoom right thing, and it was just a Reason to Drink fell out. We had fun with it.
All right. We're talking with Uncle Cracker here on Border Crossings, and I'm looking at the list of hits. You've had, quite a resume, quite an impressive catalog. Number one songs, Follow Me, that was the first number one song for you in 4 countries, top 3 in 6 other countries. Smile, 3 times platinum, that's 3 million sales. You had Drift Away, which was number one on the adult charts for 28 weeks. And so you've collaborated with Kenny Chesney, you've collaborated with Dobie Gray. Who are the 3 people you'd most like to collaborate with, dead or alive?
Dead or alive, I'd like to collaborate with Hank Williams Sr. I think that would be fun. Mainly because I never heard anything by him that was, I never heard him collaborate with anybody back then. I don't even know if they did that stuff back then, but I just think that would be fun. It would be an excuse for me to meet him, basically. Mm-hmm. And dead or alive, Hank Sr. Dan Morrison would be fun. Bob Seger would be more fun.
That's right. That's right. There we are. Detroiters, Detroit boys.
Yeah.
And we're talking with Uncle Cracker, Matt Schaefer, who is on the road right now, as I mentioned earlier, with ZZ Top and Lynyrd Skynyrd. And so I'm very curious to know what the future plans are for you. The album, you must have a tour of your own coming up in the next year ahead if when the album comes out.
I do, and I'm not supposed to talk about that, but we are locked in to tour next year, which will carry us through, well, it'll carry us through 24. So pretty sweet to have that already plotted out. I'm not a big planner, but.
Right. That's okay. Other people plan and point you, and you just go and perform and do your thing, which is great. Right. Now, you do a lot of international performing as well. So, I mean, in our audiences around the world right now tuning in, a lot of people who are tuned in know Uncle Cracker's music and love you and are fans. Some people are meeting you for the first time today. And so where are your favorite places to play? Where do you like to go when you're on the road out of the U.S.?
So I got to be honest, you know, while we have performed, you know, internationally, obviously, like, you know, Germany, Austria, things like that, I've never touched down in Australia myself. I'd love to get to Australia. It's very far and expensive, you know, to take a band across the pond to get over there. But I pretty much, so I don't get across the pond as much as I'd like to, and that's more my fault than it is anybody else's. Mm-hmm.
But so if somebody's watching now that's a promoter of concerts, Uncle Cracker would be happy to, I mean, New Zealand, Australia, these places where your music's been number one on the charts, they love you, they know you. So, you know, maybe we can make that happen, bring you out there.
Let's do it. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
You're the man. I love your music. And I mean, the next album does come out, which, do you have a time frame for that?
The full length?
Yep, then your sixth album, when the studio album's coming out.
We're talking January of 24.
Okay, that's great. I'm looking forward to hearing that from you. So we're going to do another song?
Yeah, well, should we do an old one or a new one?
That's up to you. Whatever moves you.
Oh man, I don't know. So we did two new ones. Let's do an old one. Let's do Drift Away.
Drift Away with Uncle Cracker without Dobie Gray. Here's Uncle Cracker. This is Drift Away on Border Crossings. Border Crossings, Drift Away. It's a song that was done originally by Dobie Gray, and then Uncle Cracker redid it, remixed it, and included Dobie Gray on the song. And I often wondered how that whole process works when you want to record someone else's song and then you have to go get permission and then you brought them on the song too.
So this was you'll appreciate this one. This was when I first came out with my song Follow Me, it was an acoustic type sounding song, and it was the only song on my album that sounded like that. So it started doing great at radio, and I started going to these radio stations at 6 a.m. and doing acoustic performances. You know, they'd have you do 2-3 songs, and, you know, you'd do some promotion on the morning shows. And so Kid Rock suggested that I do Drift Away because it was a nice acoustic sing-along song to couple with Follow Me, right? So I started doing this, and then I came through New York. And surely you remember Scott Shannon.
Oh, yeah. Z100, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so Scott Shannon, great dude. I did that one morning on his show, and he called my record label, and he was like, you guys are dummies if you don't have him cut that and put that out as his first single off the next record. Of course, you know, whatever Scott Shannon said, the record label was, we got a Scott Shannon call, you know? So the record label called me, and they're like, You gotta do Drift Away. And I was like, I'll see. I had already recorded it after Scott Shannon told me I should, but I wasn't gonna let anybody know that at the label, and just wanted to see, like, you just can't, you know, you just, I just had, I don't know, I was just being difficult for a minute. But anyway, that's how Drift Away came about. And then, you know, they suggested getting Dobie on, and Dobie wouldn't do it. We had to donate 10 grand to one of his charities for him to step on. He was a very nice man. And he was very, well, obviously he crushed it on there when he did to do the vocals. And we did it in Nashville at Ocean Way Studios. And he came in, he did it. And even when we did like all the talk shows, the nighttime stuff, like, you know, Jay Leno and David Letterman and all that stuff, he was more than happy to come in. And I didn't think we were going to get that out of him, but we did. You know, Dobie was a good man, and he just, I don't know, I was lucky. He gave me his full blessing, you know. It's got to be weird when somebody cuts your song, you know. So, and it was written by Menor Williams, which was, he was living in New Mexico at the time. I'm not sure if he's still where he's at or if he's still around, for that matter. I think he is, but anyway, point was, it wasn't difficult. Dobie made everything easy, and his management made everything easy, and he everything was very cool with him. Video and everything. He flew to Detroit to do the video with me and stuff. He didn't have to do any of it, but he did all of it.
Well, you obviously have had a great career. What's been the highlight? Is there something you can pick out as being something that stands out above the rest for you?
I got to be really honest. Like, this whole thing is a highlight for me, you know, and every time I think something can't be topped, something better happens, you know. Like, I just remember sitting there and early on in the early Kid Rock days, and we did a MTV thing with Aerosmith and Run DMC, like a mashup together. And I just remember sitting behind the turntables with Jam Master Jay, and I'm like, this could not get any better. And then like a phone call comes in from like Hank Williams Jr. And he's like inviting you to like the barbecue at his 4th of July house. You know, like, you're like, ah, how does this even get any better? So just things are always, this whole ride's been one big highlight for me.
What's on your fingers? I see you got tats on the knuckles.
Should say homesick, but unless it's backwards to you.
No, it says homesick.
Okay.
That's cool. I love it. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And I know, you know, you got to go and do sound check and stuff like that for the tour that you're on right now. But what a great thrill it is for me to be able to talk to somebody, you know, back from Detroit, and somebody who's done so well musically from an area that I grew up in.
Oh, man, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And it's good to talk to hometown people, too, man. Thanks for feeling good.
I also want to give you a chance to say hi to the troops and to our international audience that are all around the world that are tuning in to meet Uncle Cracker.
Well, man, just want to say, hey, thank you guys for everything. And thank you to everybody listening. Thank you to the troops. God bless.
And where's your website? If people want to get more information, they want the tour, they want the music, where do they go?
You can go to UncleCracker.com. They can go to the Instagram. We'll send you to the Uncle Cracker Instagram. We'll send you to the website if you want it. There's always a link in the Instagram website, whether it be new music, so it'll direct you. It'll take you everywhere you want to go except home.
We're excited about the new album and the new music, and I'm glad you're still doing what you do because you do it so well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Uncle Cracker's our guest, and this is Border Crossings. You're watching VOA TV.